We're talking Giants this hour with Richard Dewhurst, the ancient Giants who ruled America. We'll be back with more and some calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Richard Dewhurst with us. Richard, you're talking about some of these ritual sacrifices. Can you go more in depth about that?
Well, in a lot of the mounds, there is evidence of ritual beheading and so on and so forth. But out in Catalina Island, which is one of the most incredible stories I ran across, perhaps I would say the most incredible story I ran across.
Tell me about that one.
Well, in 1919 to 1930, now Catalina Island was owned by the Wrigley family, and they had the Catalina Museum there, which the curator was Ralph Glidden, and he has been maligned as a crackpot amateur archaeologist, but in fact, he was the curator of the museum, and he also ran the Hay Foundation, which was officially part of the Smithsonian. And he conducted a series of digs on Catalina Island and the associated Channel Islands. On Catalina Island, he found a burial ground. He said there was probably four on the island. The one that he excavated, he removed 3,781 skeletons, averaging 7 feet tall. The tallest one was 9 foot two. He also found a megalithic era temple, and to get to the ritual sacrifice, they found a what they said was seemed to be a highly engineered stone bowl, and inside that was a blonde-haired girl, and then underneath her were 64 apparently ritual burials of other youth, and then under that they found a giant.
And where'd that go?
Well, I mean, that's an incredible story. He actually, at the gift shop, began, he patterned the gift shop after the Hall of Bones, I think, in Malta or something. And so the gift shop was literally hung with these bones, and the public was going wild, and they could buy them and so on and so forth. And my research indicated, I don't go into the book, but it apparently got the interest of sort of neo-Nazi groups at the time who were going to use it as a touchstone for founding an Aryan religion or refounding it. Anyway, they closed the whole thing down in the 1930s, scrubbed it from the history books. I lived out in L.A. for 25 years and did a lot of research related to American Indians, Indians, and so I didn't run across any of this information. And this was not only national news, it was international. I reproduced a front page article, Sunday Supplement, about all these finds. And then a couple of years ago, the museum was reincorporated as the Catalina Island Museum in the 1950s. A couple of years ago, the curator there was putting together a show about World War II, and he apparently found several boxes of Ralph Glidden's material. Said we had no idea, you know, it was here and so on and so forth. And Los Angeles Times covered it, a couple other publications. They make no mention of all the skeletons that were found. They make no mention of the giants. They still categorize them as a crackpot. And but it managed to surface. So it's only a matter of time until the rest of the story comes out. Now, apparently 200 skeletons are at the Fowler Museum in UCLA, but they're not saying anything either.
Well, there seems to be a pattern here, Richard, though. Everybody who is holding these skeletons seems to be suppressing it. So are we being paranoid here, or is there something afoot?
Well, I think at some point internally there's some sort of directive, and the things are sent and then put into a storage and they disappear. And then because the later generations of anthropologists, archaeologists have no memory, have no knowledge of any of this, there's no searches going on. And as I said, I mean, the articles that came out in the last couple, 2-3 years, Los Angeles Times, big article, you know, well, they found this stuff. And I show in the book that the Smithsonian has in their own archives over 500 photos from his digs. They list him as a curator and part of the Smithsonian by way of the Hay Foundation. They didn't step forward when any of this information came out and said, well, we have, you know, over 500 photos. And it wasn't only Glidden. There was a Golden State Museum found on Santa Rosa Island more giant skeletons, bone flutes, grave goods, so on and so forth. Curiously, about 2 weeks ago, the Smithsonian announced that they went back to Santa Rosa Island recently and started digging on a bluff over there overlooking the ocean, found 19 sites. They say with they're starting to date artifacts out of there 10 to 12,000 BC, and they're admitting that these people used boats.
How about good old P.T. Barnum? Did he ever confiscate or try to confiscate a skeleton?
Well, the... I can't get a definitive read on that, but yes, there seem to have been skeletons being exhibited. A lot of these skeletons were brought to town and exhibited in store windows. P.T. Barnum, again, there was a story that had to get cut out of the book for length about the Cardiff Giant, which was an 11-foot statue that was exhumed in New York, and it was taken down. Well, I mean, it created such a sensation that it was eventually taken down to New York. Barnum tried to get hold of it. I think they exhibited it in New York across the street. Again, the Smithsonian and the New York Tribune got together to debunk the whole thing. Now, it was also found with hieroglyphs on it and exposed genitals. And they said the farmers did this, you know, because they wanted to create an attraction. And, you know, my first question is, you know, if you wanted to create an attraction for Barnum, why would you have exposed genitals, first of all? And then when they had to find out where the stone came from, it turned out the stone actually came from Wisconsin. So they created this elaborate thing that these two farmers, you know, went you know, to Wisconsin and, you know, got the stone and they brought it to Chicago and they tried to get it carved and they couldn't get it carved, so one of the farmers carved it. Meanwhile, as they debunked the thing, guys from Harvard who had examined it said it was real.
All right, let's take a few more calls for you. You ready? You got some people lining up to talk to you. Bill in Ohio, truck driving on the wild card line. Hey, Billy, go ahead.
For you. Basically, you know, if you can, I want you to tell me if I should give up on something. There are two kind of obscure historians that I've been looking at for a while. One is Marija Gimbutas, which actually she's not so obscure. But she had the Kurgan hypothesis. And the other one was a Yuval Shestalov, who believed that the Sumerians or the Vogel people in Siberia are descendants of the Sumerians. Now, both of those, you know, it seemed rather ridiculous until I started looking into it. And I'm wondering if you've ever heard of the Tocharian people that on today's geopolitical definition would have been Chinese. But they are always depicted as extremely tall and extremely pale. And I'm wondering if it's possible, like from the Asian steppe to the Pontic steppe. I mean, long story short, is it possible these people herded aurochs, you know, bovine species, and they ate them, they herded them, and they also followed grassland and did like littoral sailing, no deep water sailing, and it would have taken them between the continents.
What do you think of that, Richard?
There was some very famous finds in Western China about 20 years ago, and in that case, the skeletons were mummified because of the dry nature out there. The one they found was 6'6". His wife, I think, was 6'2". Tattoos, so forth. I know of a case where they sort of documentary where they traced blue-eyed Mongolian, and they found out European genetic links. There's an incredible amount of evidence starting to come out of Russia from advanced megalithic society. A lot of it ties into ancient Thrace and the Scythians. Again, the tribe of Dan. All of these threads are starting to come together to indicate a worldwide culture, seagoing. The thing about the mounds in America is that they're all located on major waterways, major rivers. I started to do a Google map thing and it got so full of pins I couldn't even use it. But it became clear that you could enter the waterways in Savannah and Charleston, travel all the way up to Lake Erie. You could come in the Atlantic and use waterways to go all the way into the Mississippi. You could use other waterways. And also, we're talking now 10,000 years, so the water levels were much higher. I would say that all these threads, the Greek Titans, all of that, when you start tying it all together, I think that we have an extremely ancient culture, high culture, that fell in various stages at different times around the world.
Richard, if you were given free rein to walk around the Smithsonian, where do you think you'd go? Somewhere down in the basement?
I'd go to the storage facility.
You think they're there?
There's skeletons there, and they haven't been examined. That's
would they be in boxes or what?
Yeah, I mean as I said, Heldrushka, in order to preserve his Bering land bridge theories, was just notorious for boxing him up unstudied and putting him back in storage. And the case I just told you about, the Spirit Cave mummy, they found that in 1940, said it looked like it was 1,000 years old, and it promptly went into storage. And if the professor from the University of California hadn't have used his credentials, and that's the other problem, is that if you're not credentialed, you can't get access to any of this stuff.
Next up, let's go west of the Rockies. Bob in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
My first time calling, so I'm kind of nervous. But
you'll be fine.
We're dealing with a cover-up, maybe, and trying to hide, the fact that there were giants in the earth.
Indeed.
And I know a little bit about the Bible. Before the flood, it said that angels left heaven. Evidently, they were demons, and they came down. They saw that women were beautiful, and they had relations with them.
And descended on Mount Hermon.
True. True.
And their offspring were Nephilim.
Correct.
Who were the giants, right?
Yep.
Right. So, but they all died during the flood, and then the demons left and went back to the spirit realm or whatever. But then after there would have been King Og. Do you know about him?
King
of Og.
Yes.
In the Bible, it describes, the dimensions of his bed. It ends up being, 5 feet wide and 11 feet long.
Sounds like a giant to me.
Yeah. So if there was really, Satan has him and his demons, I was thinking, they're really, he would be the only one that would be able to cover up a worldwide thing like this on that type of scale, because I believe that he doesn't want people to think that he's real.
See, I'm not quite so sure, Richard, that they were wiped out.
Well, again, it's purely conjecture, and the Bible is one source for these giant stories. The Greek myths are another source. The Norse myths are another source. You have the stories of the Tuatha De Danann, who are also supposedly giants. The Anunnaki stories out of Sumeria also seem to start indicating presence of giants. Now, there's, the giants that I described that look like Cro-Magnon man, and we also have these elongated skulls, which we even see into Egyptian depictions of Nefertiti. And I think that taking all these strands together, I'm beginning to think that what we called the gods were the elongated skull people.
Yes.
And that the show is giants. You know, are the Cro-Magnon, you know, looking remains. And
I still think there might have been some kind of E.T. presence here.
Well, you know, I've got a picture in the book of a giant with horns on it that they found in Sayre, Pennsylvania, in association with another 64 giants that they found.
A human with horns?
In that particular case, it again was sent away and disappeared, but there's a depiction in the Vatican of Moses with horns, and there's also stories of Alexander the Great having horns.
And Satan had horns.
And Satan having horns, you know.
You don't call them humans, though. You call them giants. How come?
Well, I'm just trying to delineate here, you know, various strains. I mean, they certainly appear to be just robust humans. Now, if you take some of the mythological stories, maybe what we're dealing with here, especially with stories of Plato and Atlantis, is an advanced culture that had a high degree of sophistication and technology that then became degenerated and began to practice immoral acts and, you know, execution, human sacrifice, so on and so forth. So we may have a conflation here. And then also, you know, a demonization of the giants just in general in order to make ourselves feel better about ourselves. So it's very hard to pull all these strands out and say this one, you know, was good, this one was bad.
Richard, where do we get your book, The Ancient Giants Who Ruled America?
Well, it's available on Amazon and Kindle, and right now it's number one on both of those for archaeology.
Good for you.
Controversial knowledge.
Well, after this show, it's going to be way up there.
Also available at all Barnes & Noble. It's available from my publisher, Inner Traditions. And it's also available internationally at a number of international bookselling sites.
Okay. I don't have a website for you. Do you have one?
No. Just Facebook.
All right. Give us how do we find you on Facebook?
I'm under my name on Facebook. I've been getting a lot of friend requests. I may run out of space pretty soon.
D-E-W-H-U-R-S-T. That's Richard Dewhurst. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, and we will take final phone calls with him and talking about Facebook. We're there, too. You can get to us by going to coasttocoastam.com. Upper right-hand corner, just click the Facebook and Twitter. Okay? Like us and follow us on that, too. We're going to come back. More of your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Richard Dewhurst with us, of course, and your calls as we talk about the ancient giants who ruled America. Do you find that your work, your research, Richard, has stepped on some toes? I mean, has anybody come after you?
Not yet. I've gotten a few negative feedbacks on Amazon. Alleging that there was no giants in the book, but so far, no official response yet.
So no, in terms of peers or colleagues, they haven't said, what are you doing?
I have some very good friends who still refuse to believe any of the material and have a very hard time reading it and discussing it with me, and that's probably a general, and those people are academics, so it's probably indicative of the kind of response I would expect from the academic community at this point.
All right. Lucy is in San Antonio, Texas. Get us started this segment. Lucy, go ahead.
Hi, I have a mouthful. Excuse me. This is Lucy, and the question I had is time. How does time fit into all of this?
I don't know what you mean by that, Lucy. Explain a little bit more.
Okay, originally, with your other guest, we were talking about portals.
Yes.
And nobody mentioned time. You know, we talked about different ways to go in and out of parallel universes. And now we're talking about these giants. And I believe I've seen these giants before.
Where have you seen them?
I don't believe I know. I know I've seen them.
Where?
Oregon.
In Oregon? What are you, walking around or what?
No, I was a part of a group that organized outdoor music festivals.
Okay.
And after the festival was over, we were all invited to go to this area where there were these really fast running waters in a creek where you could just sit on it and it would just take you a long distance. And there these group were, and they looked Aryan, extremely Aryan. And they were big. They were so beautiful that their lashes looked like they had flecks of gold.
How were they dressed?
What?
How were they dressed?
Right. That was the odd part. They all were wearing white, like linen, and it was draped around themselves. They just, of course, they would fit in with a group of us, you know.
Well, not if they were 12 feet tall. How tall were they?
They were not 12 feet. They were more like 7 feet at best.
All right. Now, that's a quick question then for you, Richard. Seven-footers, would they be categorized as giants?
That's the starting point, and my research is about 7 feet, yeah.
Could you have a little colony of them running around somewhere?
Well,
I've never heard of it.
I'm willing to consider the theory of the hollow Earth, and if they went anywhere during the cataclysm and survived, that would probably be where it would be.
I'm not going to say to Lucy that she didn't see these creatures or these people or these entities, whatever they may be. But I haven't heard of that before. Next up.
I haven't either, but.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Dean in Redlands, California. Hey, Dean, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hey there. I'm from Redlands, California. I'm a huge listener. It's my first time calling.
Thanks, Dean.
I wanted to see if what Richard had in regards to his opinion of the canopy theory of the early Genesis days. Now, the canopy theory goes back to Genesis, let me see here, 1:6-8, where it goes into let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters and let it separate the waters from the waters and so on and so forth. And I did some research into it, and it seems like that's why there was such a long lifespan and why people were able to flourish and why Noah during the Great Flood was in his 600s. Now, do you think that, I don't know if you've read into the canopy theory or anything like that, but do you think that this could have had any effect possibly on how that society is able to have flourished back in their day?
I'm not familiar with those theories. Some people have suggested that even gravity may have been different in extremely ancient ages. I know nothing about any of that, but I do know that the geological record seems to indicate things get smaller over time, not bigger. And the reasons for that are, frankly, beyond me.
See, I'm baffled. You know, assume we believe Genesis, regardless of what it might be, what he was talking about, what they were talking about, whether it was, giants that came down, ETs, godlike figures, angelic, or just human beings who might have been on the planet before. Regardless of it, I think the accounts are accurate. The interpretations might be off, but something happened with some really big people a long time ago, don't you think, Richard?
Unquestionably, the research is there to prove it.
Well, and you've been uncovering it piece by piece. What do you think is the most startling revelation in terms of the research? Not the skeletons, but I mean,
well,
in just
for me,
the terms.
It was my reappraisal of American history. I went into this basically believing what I was taught in school in regards to the Indians and teepees. And once I began to read these accounts of the giants, I had to familiarize myself with mound builder culture. And then I discovered that we're talking about 10,000 years of culture in the United States that were not taught in school. And this goes all the way into the copper finds in Michigan, where up in the Keweenaw Peninsula, and especially in Isle Royale, they estimate anywhere from 500 million to 1.5 billion tons of copper were taken out of there. Then you look at all of the high degree of sophistication of the things found in these mounds. We're looking at a radically different history of America. That's really was the most surprising thing to me.
What's it going to take for this story to truly explode out there?
The academic community is going to have to start reappraising the mounds. And we have a problem in America right now, which is that the mound builder culture is not recognized as an indigenous Indian tribe. And the reason for that is nobody's ever been able to step forward and say, I'm a descendant of the mound builders. So they have no protection at all. There was a case recently where I tried to get in the book, but it was too late, down in Alabama, where a huge mound is across the street from a Walmart, and they were petitioning the city council to knock the mound down and put in a parking lot. And there was no academics stepping forward to protect the mound. The federal government was offering no protection. These mounds have been decimated all the way across the country, and there's really been very little done about it.
All right. We go next to Patty in Seattle, Washington. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I am really fine. Very proud of the Seattle Seahawks, by the way.
Oh, yes. You should be. Yes.
How exciting. What I wanted to talk to you about is that maybe this can help you go in a direction, actually, because what I wanted to talk about was the first Earth Age spoken of in the Bible. Everybody thinks that the Great Flood was the first flood, but it was actually the second flood. And the very second line in the Bible is actually a slight mistranslation. It says, and the earth was without form and void. It actually, if you read it straight out Hebrew, it says the earth became without form and void. So that's the first hint that points at the first earth age. And actually in 2 Peter 3, 5 through 13, it describes all three earth ages. But the first earth age, it says God wiped out the entire planet of anything living because Satan took away one-third of mankind and swayed him to his side. And so there was so much evil on the earth that God just destroyed it all. And the giants that were spoken of, many of them were spoken of from this first earth age that everybody seems to overlook. But there's a lot of research. If you just Google the first earth age, you'll probably find quite a lot about it. But it said in 2 Peter 5, it says, for this they are willingly ignorant of, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of the water and in the water, whereby the world that was then, being overflowed with water, perished. So they're talking there about the first earth age, not about the flood of Noah's time. And the purpose of the flood of Noah's time was the world had again become corrupt. There were giants on the earth, both in the first earth age, and I think those are the 25 and 50 footers, and I think they were all the creatures of mythology that were spoken of. I think they were real. And all the Sumerian times, I think those were real. But the flood of Noah's time, the purpose of that was to wipe out as much evil as possible so that there was a clean seed line for the Messiah to come through. And if you, you know, many people, of course, have read the Bible, but God very carefully protected that seed line up until the time that Jesus was actually conceived. So you really see a purpose in that. And, yeah, I'd like to know your opinion on that.
Well, it ties into the Anunnaki stories. It also ties into the stories of Plato, which all seem to indicate that there was an advanced race that started off in a very holy way and then descended into sin. Now, the Anunnaki accounts in Sumeria, they say Enlil consciously wiped out that race of people because he found them. Well, he said they were making too much noise and they were falling into degradation. So that seems to be a pretty general theme of ancient mythology.
Well, that's an amazing
story. But in the Americas, the evidence is not of a warlike degenerate culture at all. It seems to be a very sacred culture that worships the land. And so, you know, I can't really disagree with the ancient myths, but now some of the evidence in the Americas doesn't show a sinful, degenerate culture, but there are ritual sacrifice and so on and so forth. But as I said to somebody in another interview, we just killed 1 million people in Iraq, and so, you know, are we guilty of the same thing, I might ask.
Let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee. Daniel's turn. Go ahead, Daniel.
Oh, thank you very much. I feel very fortunate in getting in to talk to you. Must be a great gauge that you're hard to get in touch with, George, and we appreciate what you're doing tonight.
Thank you.
I've got a question for you and a question for Richard, if I may. First of all, Richard, are you aware that in the January 2000 edition of National Geographic, they finally announced a fold-out map there of the world, and there was a second land bridge from Europe approximately 10,000 years ago in one of the ice ages. Are you aware of that?
Not specifically, but because the ocean levels were 400 feet lower, it was much more exposed land and island, and you could really hop across. And there's also indications of an interspatial period of warming where you could have traveled in the northern climes much easier, which would make island hopping incredibly easy.
Yes, sir. Okay, the second question I would have for you before I get to George, please. One of the National Geographic issues a while back, they had a face of a Mayan mask on the front, and that mask was taken from a 7.5-foot giant in a stone sarcophagus out of the Mayan diggings in Central America. I don't know if that you can be finding that or not. But
well, I'm working on trying to expand my research for the next book into Central and South America and, by extension, into the rest of the world. And
great. We're looking forward to it.
It's all over Mexico of giants, including the foundation stories of Teotihuacan.
All right, go ahead,
Dave.
Great.
Finally, George, you mentioned Bigfoot a while ago.
Yeah.
Last year I saw on Discovery Channel and some of those things, ancient astronauts and so forth, a couple of fellows in Oregon shot a juvenile and an adult Bigfoot. They were scared that the government officials might come get them because it was in a national park, and they buried with brush the juvenile, which died in right there in front of them when they approached the body. The adult they never did find, so they buried it with brush. A scientist quickly told them to please go back and let's get some DNA from it. They found a patch of skin that was left and some hair after a few months, and they took it back to the lab, and they discovered that there was a divergence of cultures from giants, and they're related to us genetically, DNA. Had you heard about that story?
Yeah, we have, and I don't really, Daniel, believe the story. I think it is a hoax, and I think you need to be really careful with those stories like that. They get out. Richard, I only have a couple minutes left. Let's take another call, maybe two, and then a wrap-up with you. First-time caller, let's go to Gayla in Topeka, Kansas. Gayla, go ahead.
Oh, I'm so happy to get to talk to you. I have a relative back several generations that was supposedly over 7.5 feet tall. He was lived here in Kansas. He was born in 1871, and I've never been able to find where his grave is at, but I was told by relatives that they had to build a special coffin to bury him in because he was so tall, and that everybody in this local area just outside of Topeka here is where they all lived at. And they called him Jumbo, and that he couldn't put his legs underneath a table. And his school desk, even when he was a boy, they had to put up on some kind of logs or something underneath his school desk so that he could even be in school because he was so tall. But it must be a recessive gene because he was my great-grandmother's brother, and she was also well over 6 foot tall, which, you know, for a woman, that's kind of unusual. But then there's never been anybody else in the family that's been tall like that.
Let's wrap it up. 30 seconds to go. Overall, Richard, what do you think of Giants?
What do I think of Giants?
Yes, sir.
Well, I think that we're going to begin to find out a lot more about their culture, and especially with the access to the Internet, we're going to see multiple accounts from all over the world of specific finds that indicate they're real.
It's an incredible story, and maybe one day the Smithsonian will open up their coffers and we can see these skeletons. Richard, thanks for being on the program, The Ancient Giants Who Ruled America. We're having reports of some strange UFO reports, so we're going to check in on that in a moment with Joshua P. Warren.